Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Yes, it is.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome
to Wild and Crazy Nights.
The Athletic presents Hogan Johns.
Hogan for the win.
We're in the middle corner.
We're going to consistently put players in position to succeed. The most important piece is we're going to take the North and never give it back.
From CHGO, it's Adam Hogan.
I don't think that this is a full rebuild, but you definitely have to retool your roster.
And from The Athletic, it's Adam Johns.
Hey, what's up, Flus?
And we're going to have measurable ways for standards of performance every single rep, every single game.
Anyway, who cares?
Now, here they are. The Adams, Hogan Johns.
What's up? Welcome in, Hogan Johns, back with you. Post-owners meetings at our sit-down with Matt Eberflus the other day in Orlando. If you missed that episode, please go check it out. We have another special episode that we teased with you guys earlier in the week. A little collaboration with the Athletic Football Show. Our friends Robert Mays and Nate Tice. Always love talking football with you guys, and appreciate you jumping on today.
Happy to do it, man. Very excited to be here. I was also at the owners' meetings, and I got to say, this Matt Eberflus glow-up, it's the first time I'd seen it in person. And beyond the beard and the hair, I saw him walking by me in the lobby, and he had like this textured knit polo on and these white pants. I was like, this man has talked to somebody, even beyond the people grooming him. Like, he's got some styling advice in the last 6 months or so. I respected it. It feels like I got to step my game up over here.
He's got a great shoe game going.
Yes, his shoes were great. I was like, this man has talked to some professional stylist in some capacity, and it has served him very well.
It's almost very disappointing that he missed the coach's picture.
Oh, there's like six guys that missed it, didn't they? Must have been a hell of a night. I think he's watching a lot of CBS and sees March Madness, and he's like, that Jay Wright guy, he's got it going on. And so he's like, I want a little bit of that. I want a little bit of that Jay Wright action and trying to get that glow up. But I'm glad you guys include me on this as a quote unquote neutral fan. So I'm glad I get to join this three-man weave of Bearsdom that I kind of just get to drop in and drop out and go, hey, this guy's good, right? All right. See you guys in a couple months. So I'm glad I get to do this. I like this kind of annual tradition we got going.
How about talking about like going back in time, a potential glow up for your father when he was as a coach? No, never wanted to see a stylist.
He started wearing the glasses in Chicago. So there was a little bit of that. He started wearing the rim glasses. Those hit once he got out of Chicago, those left. So now he's just got the Costco readers. Yeah, I think he tried to do like a slick back hair too. Like he tried to go for a little Seagal, like a balding Steven Seagal look. He did.
I just can't see your dad rocking a Gucci bag like Flus was the other day.
That was the other thing I missed. Is the he had a leather backpack that he was wearing with this outfit. The man was bringing the heat.
Where's he originally from? Toledo?
Toledo.
Okay. All right. Let's go for it. No, I love the coach club is a good one.
Not even kidding, though, Adams. You guys were on him every day last year. And there was a moment, I think, right after they fired the defensive coordinator, and the Bucks game was that first game after they did that. And he's on the sideline, and he's on his little sheet writing stuff down. He looks all flustered. His hair is everywhere. How much more just quiet confidence do you have in the man that he looks like now compared to what he looked like at that point last year? I think that there's a real element to this.
There was a point, Adam, we talked about this on the show, like mid to late last season, where like his messaging changed, like almost someone told him he's coming back next year, but we're not saying it publicly, where you just sensed that this was a different Matt Eberflus. And then it continued into this offseason where, which press conference where he walks up with this beard, and you're just like, whoa, like this is a whole different person, whole different coach. And like his players are commenting about it on social media. Like it was different.
I think it was when they were introducing the new coordinators. Like he kind of disappeared for a couple weeks since they decided to keep him. And then all of a sudden he shows up to introduce Shane Waldron. and we didn't even know Flus was talking. And it was like he almost showed up there just to show his new look. He gave a little opening statement. He didn't answer any questions. And then it was
a trailer.
Like, yeah, and then it's like, here's Shane Waldron. And everyone's like, whoa, 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 wait a minute. No. Like, who cares about Shane Waldron now? What just happened with your face and your hair and everything?
Poor Pat Finley just couldn't contain himself. Like,
you got a fade going on? I mean,
ready to go.
We can't just let you walk off.
He was with LaFleur? Or
it was at the Bucks game. I think it was at the Bucks game. He was sitting next to LaFleur. And the fact that they were going like haymaker for haymaker style-wise, Matt LaFleur is a very well-dressed man. So all props to Matt Eberflus.
I always love watching the coach go up to coordinator. And then that's when you usually see the glow up, you know, get a bump of paycheck, you know, then you start seeing a different car. Maybe that Ford becomes, you know, maybe a Mercedes, see something, a different lease from the team sponsor and all that. That's usually the bump is the coordinator. And then head coach, they're like, okay, this is my style anyways. But yeah, this is the rare mid season switch to style from a head coach. So yeah, good for Matt Eberflus. This is a very rare experience that we're going through in Chicago.
So I wasn't necessarily going to leave with this, but since we're talking about it, you know, Robert, when you were bringing up that early season, those struggles they were having, I picture the there's two games I picture with what you were just talking about. There was the Tampa game because it was just so hot and like sweaty and he looked flustered. And then there's the Kansas City, the Chiefs game where they're getting killed too. And it just, I know on this show, the name Mark Trestman was starting to come up. Like, how bad is this going to get? How downhill can this thing possibly go? And to his credit, I mean, it seems like they've come out the other side of this. No one's crowning them, you know, even the NFC North champions yet. But it sure seems like Matt Eberflus survived and the rest of the season got mostly on track, especially with his defense. And that's not nothing to me. I mean, I feel like to survive that and come out the other side of it is actually a pretty significant deal.
When you're looking at head coaches in the league, they have to bring something. You either have to be a culture setter or you have to elevate your side of the ball, depending on what that is. And if you looked at the first couple years of the way the Bears were playing and the results they were getting on defense, there was very much a, so what would you say you do here, Matt, sort of feeling to all of this. But when you saw things shift defensively in the back half of the year, let's be honest here. Let's put it on the table. That's why he still has this job. If the defense had not had the change and the turn of direction and just that real swing upward in trajectory last season after the sweat trade and after those younger guys started settling in, he would not be the head coach of the Bears. But because there were results on his side of the ball specifically, I think that's the argument you can make for why he should be back and maybe why people have a little bit more confidence in what this is going to look like moving forward.
They won 5 of their last 8 games with a defense that was... Look, the sacks weren't there, even though Montez Sweat was providing them. But in a lot of regular football statistics have you, then even the advanced EPA, like they were top 5, top 3 for a good duration of the final 8-9 weeks of the season.
One of the best watches in the entire league, either side of the ball, offense or defense. The Saints game, which was the first game with Montez Sweat.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the games leading up to that, after Kyler Gordon got back healthy, and then after Phil Snow got it to the staff, it seemed like that they, this is something. And I think I came on the show and we were talking more about the quarterback stuff. And then I think we had gotten to an Eberflus discussion. And I was like, I don't know, the defense is looking interesting. So I guess I'm going to give him some more time. And then I think Robert and I talked about on our show, it's like the defense is good. And it just felt like every time we kept checking in, it's like the defense is great. And just what Robert said is if you are supposed to be this X and O sound scheme guy and you're going to be, I know you try to be the CEO type, but you're still, that's the bed you're making every day, that you are the defensive guy. So if that's not right, like Robert said, what do you do here? So the fact that he turned that around and it's very sound and I think very sustainable is not that type of defense that could be, you know, super funky and be up and down. They have some of that in there. That's what I think is really cool. It's like, that's a bedrock of this franchise, which is, which year are we checking in on the Chicago Bears talking defense? So, but I think that's
even
good.
Front but, sound zone defense. It's what I've lived my entire life.
It's insane. But it's the DB group. I know that we just talked about pass rush, but every level, they have good players and a good unit, which not a lot of even good defenses in the league have. They have a weakness somewhere. They're good at every spot with young players and vets. It's one of the more top end units on either side of the ball in the entire NFL. I think so, even right now, and even before we get into the draft, and even things that happens in before the season starts.
I wish I could feel that way. I still have my
I do, man.
Well, so let's hit on that then, because the let's talk expectations then before we get into some deeper positional talk. But the over-unders this week have the Bears at 8.5 wins. They were at 7.5 last year. They ended up winning 7. Okay. What is maybe to me was a little bit more interesting was that the Bears to make the playoffs, like just to bet them yes to make the playoffs, is -120 and no is +100. So there's actually a slight lean from the bookmakers that the Bears are a playoff team as opposed to not being a playoff team. I mean, they're right on the edge, but Robert, how do you feel about that right now as we're talking about it in late March?
I think that says more about the state of the NFC than it says about anything else. If you look at the second tier teams in the NFC, I mean, all the teams that might even be in contention for a wild card, it's hard to get excited about most of them. The Seahawks are in a stage of transition with a new coaching staff. I have faith in what that'll look like, but I think it's going to take a little while, even on defense, bringing in Mike McDonald. If you look at what's going on in the NFC South, you know, Atlanta, potentially, I still don't buy the Bucs. I know they made the playoffs last year. This idea that the Bucs are like the super exciting team, they just brought back the team they had last season that was like 20th in offensive DVOA and won a terrible division. I think they'll be fine, but I'm not overly excited about them. And then you look at the NFC East and the second tier teams there aren't that scary. I think that Detroit and Green Bay are going to be favorite to be the playoff teams. At least one of them will be a wild card team. But if you told me the Bears were the second wild card team from the NFC North coming up in this season, that wouldn't surprise me at all.
That's kind of where I'm at. Well, yeah. Cowboys took a drop off. Eagles are doing what they're doing, reconfiguring. It's Washington and Giants don't look like they're anywhere close. It's that set, like Robert said, second, third tier. There's three wild card spots now. So that's the thing. Bears getting in at 9-8. I mean, they were borderline 500 team last year. And yes, Fields was exciting, but he had a below 50 QBR, which means that he was not playing even coin flip football at quarterback. So if you quote unquote upgrade there with Caleb, which I'm going to guess, I know we're spoiling some of the conversation, but saying that if you improve that quarterback spot, the rest is getting natural, progression, ascension, it seems like, the rest of the roster. So I feel like that just right above that 500 mark and making the playoffs as a wild card team is very realistic.
Yeah, kind of going off that, to transition the conversation, you're like, I've said this a few times, like the money ball reality for Justin Fields is that his passing numbers, they're not that hard to reproduce. Like a rookie can do that. Like that's the hard reality for all those like hardcore Justin Fields fans. Like those passing numbers, you can reproduce those with a capable veteran, an up-and-coming youngster, or even a rookie quarterback, especially one taken first overall.
Yeah.
When you're dropped into a good situation.
Yeah.
Right? And I think some of the elements of the situation have been overblown in how good of a spot it is for a rookie. The offensive line, I think, has been talked up more than it probably should be. Like, it's a fine unit. It's not great. We'll see what happens with Waldron. There are elements of this that I think people are just taking for granted in a way that they should probably be a little bit more skeptical about. But even if you take some of this with a grain of salt, compare it to other situations that guys drafted overall are dropped into, and honestly, guys even drafted in the top 10 are dropped into. I just think that the aggressiveness they've shown in building the rest of this up, even if you get mid-level quarterback play from a rookie, I'm not talking about Justin Herbert as a rookie, I'm not even talking about CJ Stroud as a rookie, a step or two down from that, I still think you can have functional NFL offense. And when you combine that with what they can do on defense, there's a pretty good chance that they are a competitive team next year, even if he doesn't blow the doors off of it from day one.
There's a road to nine wins.
Yeah, yes. Like Mac Jones as a rookie.
Yes,
Mac Jones was a rookie, was a league average quarterback. And I mean, that's remarkable as a rookie. And Caleb Williams is way better quarterback than Mac Jones, or as far as, especially as a prospect. But I even think the Patriots setup compared to the Bears, especially on offense, I think the Bears got more juice. I even at some of their skill players spots and all that. And of course, they had an outstanding defense that year, his rookie year. But that's kind of the similarities of setup. I feel like it's not the most overwhelming roster, but it's above baseline that you can get to that. And I'm with Robert on this. Weird. We talk about this 500 million times. But I feel like one more splash of interior lineman would make me feel a little bit more at ease, because I've just seen this roster, one center injury, just decimates the entire offense. So I think I just, even as a, again, neutral fan, I have PTSD about that. So would love to just keep splurging on there.
Robert, are you ready for a Bears quarterback to like just all? He's already a superstar. Every move he makes is getting scrutinized, and now he's releasing videos in response that are actually pretty funny. I mean, this is next level stuff for really a Bears player, but especially a quarterback to become. It's just going to be weird. I feel like
it's weird the profile he's walking in with. I don't care. You can do whatever you want. If you want to make reaction videos, I don't care about the phone color stuff. I don't care about what he wears. If he plays well, it doesn't. None of this matters. None of it matters anyway. I mean, that's what the guy and how he carries himself. I actually think it shows a lot of confidence and a lot of like trust in how he sees himself. And as a 21, 22 year old kid, I think it's hard to find that level of self-awareness and self-assuredness. But independent of all of that, whatever he's coming in with, none of it will matter if he plays well. Just think about what Justin Fields is to so many Bears fans. And we just talked about what the production looked like. Can you imagine what the city would do if there is a guy who is a star at that position, like a full-blown top 10 player at that spot, what the reaction will be from this fan base and from this area? It will be insane. And I still don't think most people have come to terms with what that future would actually look like.
Mahomes has made Kansas City cool. This is Chicago. this is no offense to Kansas City. You know, great town, great food, great people. But Chicago, you know, big market. And I think a lot of draft observers are, especially with Bears Twitter, and I've joked about this, but I think a lot are going like, oh yeah, the Bears are a big market, because I've get a lot of feedback on all my mocks and all my like Caleb talk and all that. It's like, yeah, they're very interested right now. And you kind of forget they're the kind of that sleeping giant a little bit of a fan base. But no, I what Robert's saying, it transforms the city. And it's also just that confidence. I feel like when my 3 years as a Bears fan, the most confident we would ever feel as far as me was when we're on punt return. And I saw Devin Hester back there and I heard Soulja Boy on a kickoff return. You know, I was like, yeah, well, I feel real good right now. You guys been there? Soldier Field would stand up for his punt returns. Remember? Yep. It was awesome. That's the only place I've been where there's punt returns, people standing up. Now imagine a quarterback giving you that feeling for 60 plus plays a game. That's what Kansas City gets to go through. That's what Buffalo gets to go through. That's what Baltimore gets to go through. That's the kind of confidence that you can give not only just a team, but just an entire stadium, an entire fan base. It's hard to describe that feeling because not a lot of fan bases get to experience it. But the fact that even if it's 20% chance of hitting that feeling, that's really exciting. That's a really exciting proposition because I think that's his upside. I think a lot of us think that's his upside.
So Nathan, the question I have for you,
yeah,
I guess like Drake May is still your number one though, right?
Yes. Yes. It's a 1A, 1B still, but right. Yes, May is.
We'll take us through it a little bit more. There's been, I guess, more film watching. The pro days are over. Do you go back and forth between the two, or is it still?
No, I'm lucky doing that show with Dane Brugler that I'm watching film during the season. So most of my quarterback takes were pretty solidified by January. And so a lot of this is just me keeping takes on the back burner until I get on the shows like this, or until we do our quarterback preview. And then I get to kind of vomit them all out and kind of get them all out there. But no, May is still my guy. And just watching even the games that I thought were kind of quote the bad games, the poor games, there's so much to take away that are positive. I think him and Williams are just such, I keep calling them purple chip guys, which is the $500 chip, but you know, better than blue chip type of guy. And I still stand by that. I don't think you can go wrong with these two, even if the flavors are different between the two. I just think their upside is MVP caliber upside. And I haven't wavered on that because it's just when you watch them, especially when you watch the other guys in this class, and that's what sometimes you got to get that kind of jerk reaction of watching other guys. Oh, then you watch these guys back, and I keep doing that. Okay, I'll watch Michael Pratt from Tulane, and I'm just pulling my hair, and I'm just like, all right, I'm going to watch May again. Oh, yeah, there it is. Oh, yeah, there we go. That's good quarterback play. That's what he still can do. I'm still a huge, huge fan of him. I'm just also a huge fan of Caleb as well. I think these are 1-2 prizes.
My experience is very different than Nate's because I speed watch them in preparation for the draft coverage because I don't really watch guys during the college season. So I watched Caleb, Drake, JJ McCarthy, Michael Penix, Jaden Daniels all in the last 2 weeks. So I am doing it back to back. So I'm watching Drake May and then I switch to the other guys and I'm with Nate where it's like, this is just different. This is a different sort of experience and the talent that we're talking about here and what he can do dropped into an NFL offense. That being said, and I'm not trying to ascribe biases to Nate here, but Drake May is the most Nate Tice quarterback of all time. Like size, the arm, how aggressive he plays. Yep. Every single box Nate wants checked at the quarterback position, including prototypical size. That is what Drake May provides you in a way that Caleb Williams does not. There are just non-traditional aspects to him that he doesn't get. He doesn't necessarily check every single box that May does.
Yeah. For me. And Williams is a guy. Is the more you watch him, I mean, right away, the standout plays are just palpable. Like, it's like, just holy crap, he can do things that you can't. And I always keep saying this line, can't even fathom. Because me, as my quarterback experience, he makes throws. They both do, because May does it kind of like deep down the field where I'm like, oh, shoot, I wouldn't have attempted that. But Williams is making throw angles and doing all that stuff that I'm like, you thought that was a workable throw in a game? I'm watching on film and I'm like, there's no angle there. You shouldn't try that. But I'm watching these guys, and it's just like, man, I watch May, though, and it's exactly what Robert's saying. Him and Stroud, if there's some combo of Drake May and CJ Stroud or Dak Prescott, then you got my perfect little quarterback. But I think May's got that kind of smartness, intelligence, smartness. As I say that, like really, really just showing how smart I am and really making the Madison, Wisconsin, you know, Badger proud here with my education level there. But I just, Robert's saying it is. It's everything I like. Scrambles. He throws it far. He's smart. He's tough. It's everything I like. Sorry. Just like keep going about it.
No, but Nate, that's why I like that you frequently talk about flavors when it comes to draft prospects, because that's how this is in the NFL too. Every GM, every front office has their own preferences and their own metrics that they lean towards. So like, that's okay. My follow-up to you on this though is, and I guess it's like kind of two questions in one. Are you surprised that Drake May seems to be quote unquote slipping here compared to some of the other quarterbacks? I think I saw Bucky Brooks do a mock yesterday where he was QB4 and wasn't even in the top 10. And I'm like,
crushing.
So, I mean, what do you think about that? And then two, I guess the second part of that question is, do you think it's just draft fatigue right now? Cause I don't buy it. I'm with you guys. To me, he's QB2. And I think there's separation between him and the next guy.
Yeah, I do too. I think these two are clearly in a tier of themselves. And I think of Jaden Daniels as more of a late first guy. He's right on that cutoff for me of, you know, I think he's 19th on my big board, and technically I have a late first grade on him, but that gets bumped up, you know, half a round. Cause he's a quarterback and how a draft process goes. But yeah, I think there's some fatigue. It's shocking to me. And Derek Klassen, I think, did it best, where he had like a thread breakdown on this, where he was like, okay, let me get this straight. Drake May has not thrown a football in 3 months. He's not tested. He's not done everything. He was fighting with Caleb Williams 1A, 1B 3 months ago. What happened? He hasn't even interviewed. He hasn't done anything. So to me, and the joke I've kind of gone with is that I think a lot of teams right now are like bad pickup artists, and they're kind of negging him, like just going like, don't talk about him. Don't acknowledge him, and maybe he'll slip to us. I really think that's what's going on a little bit. That's just because I don't know. I just rewatch these guys. I watch them. It's almost like every couple of weeks, I'm like, am I the crazy one? You know, the Principal Skinner meme. Am I wrong, or is it the children that are wrong? That's what I watch these guys, and I watch it again. I'm like, no, there's no way. Everyone's gonna have their flavors that they prefer, but to me, it's just May, especially if they're seeing the reactions to that pro day. It just feels to me that he's on a different level than Daniels. I think it is fatigue. Long story short, yes, I do think it is fatigue.
So on the flip side of that,
yeah,
just because we're on the quarterback conversation, what do you make of the JJ McCarthy top 5, top 10 buzz, which is the opposite of, I guess, the May storyline, where JJ hasn't played a game. There might be meeting with him, you know, hasn't thrown a pass in a while, didn't throw a lot of passes this past season, but now he's being discussed as a potential top 5, top 10 pick.
It took everyone 10 games to watch all the throws to get to an acceptable number of throws. Adam, it was a lot like watching, which Adam? Adam was a lot like watching Scott Tolzien at Wisconsin about how many number of throws you'd be watching with JJ McCarthy. A lot of 12 and 14, 16 pass attempt games, you know, 10 of 12, those types of games. I think Dane Brugger called it the whole time. He said, once he gets to the draft process and everyone watches him and then interviews with him, he's going to knock it out of the park. And that's, I think, what's happened. I also think that the coaches got involved in this process. And from I always split my brain between coaching and scouting. And when I watch these guys, it makes sense. There's certain guys that are going to love what he does, which is throwing over the middle, throws well in the movies. Good athlete. He's got a loose arm, not an overwhelming arm, but a good arm, I'd say. And that's what it is. I think guys watched those 12 dropbacks game after game. And they're just like, okay, there's this that translates. There's this that translates. There's the intangible stuff. There's handling a deep playbook that Harbaugh gave them. And I think that's where a lot of the love has come from. I thought that going in the teens was already rich enough. And I was like, I get it. Someone wants to take him in the Mac Jones range and, okay, get a starter with maybe some upside here. Maybe take him 11 or 14 or somewhere in the teens, something like that. Now going top five is a little rich for me. And that's where I get some hesitancy from. And we'll see how it breaks down. But I know teams are going to like him, and they do like him.
This is also about scarcity, though. I think part of the reason he's being pushed up that far is if quarterbacks go 1, 2, 3, Minnesota's got to come away with somebody, man. They got to get somebody in this process. So if they can't get up into the top three, J.J. McCarthy then becomes the next logical answer. And if it's not the Vikings, is it one of those teams at 12 or 13? Do the Raiders feel a real pressure to go get a guy? I just think that is the reason. That's the stretch in the draft that pushes a guy to 4. Because I'm sure the Vikings, the Raiders, the Broncos, if they really want a quarterback, what's the difference between taking him at 4 and taking him at 12? Because you're going to need to jump one of those teams to go get him. So I think this is also about the amount of teams in the NFL that really, really need a quarterback at this stage of the proceedings.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
So let's talk a little bit more about the Bears at number 9 now, because all this stuff we just talked about, the quarterbacks, will affect who potentially gets pushed back towards the Bears at number 9, whether or not they want to trade back there. Maybe with a team like the Broncos at 12 or something like that, who might be motivated to come up. There's going to be options there. But if we've been following and we touched on this earlier, trying to create this great situation for Caleb Williams, not making these mistakes the Bears always make, when they put these rookies in the situation. And it's interesting. I think both of you kind of touched on this earlier. Maybe the offensive line isn't as good as it's been getting credit for. So if I had to ask you right now, left tackle at 9 when they have Braxton Jones, or wide receiver at 9 when they already have DJ Moore and Keenan Allen now, which route would you go? Robert, I'll start with you.
Ah, yes, good.
Well, so this is funny, because this speaks to like larger philosophical discussions that Nate and I have all the time. Yeah. I think that Braxton Jones is a workable left tackle. That's what I think he is. And if you believe that your best path to elite offense moving forward is a star left tackle, or like a top 10-ish left tackle, then you go left tackle. I am of the opinion that I would rather have a workable offensive line and a group of skill position players that are like stars. I think that it also depends on your quarterback and what your quarterback can mitigate, et cetera. But I would rather draft the star receiver at 9 and have a workable left tackle in Braxton Jones than flip those two things and try to chase the left tackle at 9 and then find another receiver somewhere along the way. But that's just like my personal philosophy in how I tend to look at this. So I think that says more about how I see the game than what the exact right path might be.
But what's funny is, yes, I'm always line first, trenches first, go with the line that keeps you safe, keeps the floor high, all those things, keeps your quarterback upright so you can throw it to the prettier receivers. And I think I like Braxton Jones, I think, a lot more than other people. I think he's a like you said, solid star, quality. I think quality star is the term I would use. And I think a guy that you don't necessarily have to upgrade from. I think he's a winning player. Is he a star? No, but a winning player. This, to me, is the Bears, I think, are in a really nice situation. Like, I wouldn't want to go, okay, now we're going to draft a rookie left tackle. All right, bump Braxton Jones into guard. I don't even know if he could play guard. He might be able to, like, but I don't know. Chris Morgan might. But I would say, for me, especially the caliber of receivers that are in this top 10, to me, the Bears are in a situation where they can truly get a guy that can be a true, true star type of receiver. If it's Ndunze, if it's Neighbors, whatever, those are two I'm thinking of in my mind. I think that makes more sense for their situation right now. And then work, find an interior guard, try and find the tackle. I think the tackle situation is really set up well for a decent amount of time. Darnell Wright's going to be a star. And I think Braxton Jones, he's enough to win with right now. And if in a year or two, we have to upgrade and maybe find something, get creative, that yada, 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 we can do that now. But I think there's such a good situation right now to take in a Dunze or Neighbors. That's like, that's a blue chipper. And that's a true needle mover, and makes that receiver room like set up now, and set up and for the midterm, and set up for the long term, which is when you just draft a quarterback number one. I really like that, that you get all those types of options for him.
Let me interject, like I think Matt Eberflus would. What about Dallas Turner or Jared Verse? Do they move the needle for you enough? Let's say in this scenario, the top three receivers are gone, but some of the top tackles are there. And you look at your sacks last year, 31st overall, 32nd in sack percentage. You need help. You have a big glaring hole there at defensive end. Like, does that move the needle enough for you? I guess in this situation, this scenario where the top three receivers are gone, because I think if the receivers are there, you have to take one of them. But if not, what do you do?
I think trade back. That's really it. Dallas Turner to me doesn't fit the typical Eberflus defense, which is, I know everyone's in sub. Nickel's, I think, the new Verse base. Verse does, but I think that's rich for Verse. Like, I picture Verse going about 10 spots later. And I know that sounds like picking nits, but that's in draft capital. Look how the draft value chart goes, a trade value chart goes. You know, Jimmy Johnson, it goes down like that. That I think if you could trade back and maybe get Verse, that makes a lot more sense than taking Turner at 9, even if I like Turner better. I like Turner more for a odd three down tip, tight mint front. That's actually why I actually like him for Atlanta. So that it's more just like a person. Like, he's not like a, they need like a true pass rusher, like a guy that rushes the passer first and maybe can play the run second. To me, a Yannick replacement, more or less, because I think Sweat is that strong side defensive end, but this class doesn't have that in this range. It's more in the late first that those types of guys are, the Chop Robinson, the Leiatu Latu, which still might not be fits for this defense, but that's where I'm at with that. They want to go defense, try and trade back a little bit.
Right, especially because they don't have another pick until the third round. That's after that
big gap.
First one. Robert,
receiver, tackle, yeah. It can be interesting, that spot.
Robert, what's your dream combination here for 1 and 9?
Williams and Odunze. I think that I just think it makes so much sense. Like, if you and one of the reasons that I love the Keenan Allen acquisition, and I think there are drawbacks and pluses to it, but he's a slot receiver. Like, Keenan Allen is best used inside in the NFL in 2024. So that allows you to take like a true outside guy like Odunze is. If DJ Moore was your, and honestly, the roles at X and Z kind of are nebulous with those two guys. You could use DJ Moore that way. You could use Odunze that way. Because Odunze was a true X receiver at Washington, but he doesn't have to be used that way in the NFL. He has a lot of skills as like a move guy off the line of scrimmage. So if you put Moore, Odunze, and Keenan Allen together, that's beautiful. Like, there's no putting a square peg in a round hole in terms of usage and role if you have those three guys within an offense. And that's why I think, independent of positional need, the actual fits make so much sense when you conceive of them together.
Do you think this class is deep enough to where, let's say for some amazing reason, Joe Alt is there at 9 and you just can't. The receivers went, you know, maybe Dallas Turner went and you take Alt. So you take the quarterback, the left tackle. What's there at number 73? Like, is this receivers class deep enough where you're getting, I don't know, a more than serviceable, capable contributor on day one?
It depends on what you want. Like, again, there's certain guys I'm richer on that might be in that range. You know, the guy that I always like is Jalen Polk, which was Ndunze's teammate. And he's like a Diet Coke Ndunze. It's kind of funny. They have a very similar skill sets. He's just like a lesser version of that. But I have him in my 30s on my big board, but I think like Dane has him like in his 50s, you know. But again, there's a lot of teams that like him. I already know that. But then you get, you know, their other Washington guy, Jalen McMillan. But he might need to be in the slot more. And so totally perfect. Okay, I'll just make this really short. There's a lot of receivers in this draft. I have 17 receivers in my top 100. I think Dane has 18. That's not a crazy number. Everyone has 16, 17, 18. Some guys have 20. But there are going to be receiver there are going to be type of players that are useful, but again, you're not getting that needle mover type like an Odunze is. You're getting more of that solid number two. DJ Moore is great. I had him as a second team All Pro last year. I think I'm just with Robert a little bit, where it's like the Odunze DJ Moore pairing is like perfect. It's like exactly what you want out of your two receivers. And then the other guys, it's just going to be what flavor they like. Like, because like even like these guys that I have, Roman Wilson from Michigan, slot only to me. Ladd McConkey is probably going to be gone by then. He has a ton of fans. Johnny Wilson from Florida State, big, tall, 6'7", 240 pounder. Some people want him as a tight end. And I think he's outside only. Doesn't have that inside outside. Ricky Pearsall from Florida has some slot stuff to him. He's interesting. That might be one that's in that type of range. So you get into kind of flavors and you get guys that are maybe limited and you kind of are you getting into that scary Velus Jones type of thing where you're like taking a gadgety guy that is just an athlete that, as opposed to Odunze, who's ready made, who's going to step in and be a dude that can eat targets right away. So that's the trade off of it.
I think that's exactly right. If you look at the receivers drafted in the third round over the last couple of years, I think we've overrated how easy it is to find a receiver outside of the first two rounds.
It's round two, not round three.
And even the guys that hit, they're very specific sorts of players, right? Yeah. So I'm looking at the 2023 draft right now. Tank Dell goes 69th. Tank Dell is supremely undersized. Yeah. Like, he worked out, but there are size concerns there. Jalin Hyatt was drafted at 73, just conveniently enough. Very specific sort of player. Cedric Tillman was drafted at 74. Very specific sort of skill set. You have like either speed guys that are undersized or you have true X receivers that are limited with separation, like a Tillman or a Jalen Tolbert, guys like that. So I think it just gives you less flexibility in how you're building the room than as if you were to find a more one-size-fits-all sort of option earlier in the draft.
Yeah, that makes perfect sense. And that might be why it's just, if one of those three guys falls to number nine, why you just got to take them. It's just a big difference. All right, I want to bring this conversation full circle, have some fun here at the end, because this is something that came up in our CHGO offices earlier this week after the owners' meetings. And I just feel like you guys are perfect to talk about this with. So the Ryan Poles hype right now nationally has like gotten to a level where like he's everywhere. You know, he's on Pat McAfee the other day. He somehow went from Orlando to Baton Rouge to courtside of the Bulls game in the same day. And then that's all over social media. And he's, you know, he doesn't even look tired somehow. And he's just rocking, you know, a Jordan's courtside of the Bulls game. And I'm just like, how many teams can say that their general manager is more famous than their head coach in the NFL? And now maybe Flus is making a run at this with the new look and the beard. Maybe they start winning and this flips a little bit. But right now, I don't think there's any question that Ryan Poles is a bigger star than Matt Eberflus. And I don't think that is normal in the NFL. Am I wrong?
I definitely don't think it's normal. I can't think of a GM in football that's more famous than the coach. If you go back over the last 5 or 10 years in other sports, that's been the case. You know, Theo Epstein was the most famous coach or executive in baseball for however long. I think that we propped up executives in baseball like that as team builders for a long time.
Billy Beane had Brad Pitt play him.
Exactly. Billy Beane is another great example. Baseball was like that. I think there was a stretch in basketball that was like that, where you had the analytics guys. Daryl Morey, Sam Hinkie was more notable than any coach the Sixers had. Even if you look at Sam Presti and what he did. But in football, I do think it's rare. And I think part of it is age, right? He's 38 years old. And as you look at the way that NFL coaches have changed, where they're more open to media, they're more out there, the personalities have shifted a little bit to more accepting, warm, open. I think he falls in line with guys like Kevin O'Connell, McDaniel, McVay, just in terms of how old they are. So I think that's also part of the shift, is that he's just a part of a different generation. Eric DaCosta is not going on McAfee. Like, that's just not going to happen. But with Poles, I don't think he sees that as super out of character for someone like him to do.
He's also got this trade that happens to be like one of the most one-sided. Hall's, you know, like moves.
He's victory lapping.
Yes. It's hard not to.
I want to pump the brakes on that, though. I want to pump the brakes on the victory lapping. There is still a long, long way to go here.
He's been on quite a run, though. It's been basically post Claypool. It's been just, it's been quite a run.
We can't just dismiss the Claypool thing, though. The post Claypool is a very convenient line to draw.
Yes, also, technically, they did pass on CJ Stroud by making that trade. So that is at least part. I mean, I think it was understandable at the time and still understandable now, understanding the Caleb Williams there. But to Robert's point, we do need to let this thing play out for a few more years before you call it a full victory.
They have no picks this year. They have no picks this year. The way that they've gone about this, I understand a lot of the process, and I think for the most part, from the time he got the job until now, so many aspects of the process has been right. And quieter things that people don't appreciate, right? They take Braxton Jones in the fifth round, and instead of signing some stopgap player to play tackle and say, maybe this guy will be better on day one than Braxton Jones will be, they let Braxton Jones start from the beginning. And the reason you don't have to draft a tackle at 9 right now is because you did that with Braxton Jones. So I think there have been little elements of the vision that have been underrated, but at the same time, the way that they've done this offseason, this level of aggressiveness and the urgency that they're showing, there's a risk involved in this. Mm-hmm. To have no picks at this stage when you've never been a playoff team, contrast that to where the Lions were a year ago, which I think there are similarities in the steps. You're rebuilding, then you're competitive, then you want to be a playoff team. The Lions had 100 picks last year. So they are not going about this in the most traditional way. There are drawbacks to the way that they've approached this, even if I do appreciate a lot of the aggressiveness that he has shown.
They went after the veteran help. Like one of those picks,
yes,
Montez Sweat. One of those picks is Ryan Bates. I think I'm missing one there too. Next year, 2025, lots of picks, but you're right. Just in terms of they have 4 right now, like doing these Bears mock drafts, we used to have like 9-10 picks in the past. Now we just got 4 easy.
Two in the top 10.
So a lot of capital if you want to look at value and whatnot. But
something that we've talked about, Robert, is that the linebacker signings turned into a, hey, maybe you're ahead of the meta in the NFL right now. Like even something that I was like, why are you doing that? Actually, it's like I've really reconciled with and gone like, that's actually not as bad of a move. That's actually something that might be smart, is building up linebacker depth, actual starters, and actual 2-3 guys that are true starters. That, I mean, there's teams that don't even have one, and you see their entire defense fall apart. Watch the Cowboys in the second half of the year. They legit couldn't play defense because they had nobody that they could play at linebacker. If you just go away from that position. So I'm just even saying some of these moves I've been iffy on with pulls, it's actually turned out where I'm like, actually, that's pretty smart, even if they maybe wasn't the intent at times.
The Roquan trade is a good example, right? You trade away Roquan Smith, he turns into an all-pro. That's tough to stomach. But then you look at what the plan is. Okay, we're replacing Roquan Smith with 2 guys that in totality make about the same as he does, plus a second-round pick.
Yeah.
You can understand the process from how you went from point A to point B. And even with the picks, I get looking at Ryan Bates at two years of cost control for a fifth-round pick and saying, I'm going to take that guy for 2 years and $8 million with no guaranteed money left on his deal. I get looking at Keenan Allen and saying, even at $23 million at 31, I'd rather have that than the potential cost savings of a 4th-round pick and the hit rate on that. So even if I do think that there's risk and downside to some of the moves, independently, I get how you make almost every single one of them in the way that he did.
Also, the risk involved, while there is some, it is not in a way that's going to kill you for the next 2 or 3 years. Yeah. You know, like there's very little mortgaging of the future going on here if some of these things don't work out. And I think that's very important. Also, even with the lack of draft capital this year, you know, they can justify that by saying, look, if there was ever a year to not have late round picks, this is the year, because the depth in the draft isn't really there like it normally will. And they are projecting it to be back next year. So next year they'll have those picks. So even in the areas where it's fair to be like, well, this could be a concern or this is risky, like there's logical reason behind what they're doing by taking those smaller risks.
I agree with that. It also coincides with like the eventual arrival of Caleb Williams, where instead of having that 4th-round pick, we'd rather have Keenan Allen, who could help on day one, and that value is immense as opposed to some rookie who has to develop. It's having more of a sure thing in Ryan Bates, believe it or not, as opposed to some 5th-round pick who has to develop. Like, less development, or like we're going to give all our development time and energy to Caleb Williams and not others right now. That's the way I'm trying to read it.
I also think they've done a great job of offsetting a lot of that aggressiveness with really calculated decisions last year and then moving forward, like you guys mentioned. I mean, the fact that they had 2 more second round picks last year. So you have a lot of cheap guys on the roster. Tariq Stevenson, Zach Pickens, Gervon Dexter, all these guys that are second, third round picks that you're developing. And I think that's what you have to do. It's people, I think, too often are try to ascribe this one track thinking to NFL teams. Yes. The Texans are a perfect example. Okay. So the Texans are pushing all in, right? They're going to try to win a Super Bowl this year, which I love. They go out and sign Danielle Hunter. They go out and make these splashy moves in free agency. And then they trade down out of the first round. And people are like, well, I thought that they were all in. Well, that's the wrong way to look at it. They're trying to offset some of the expensive aggressiveness with more bites at the apple to find cheap players to build around the core that you have. So I think you guys make a great point. They don't have it this year, but next year they have an extra two. Last year they had a bunch of second and third round picks. So I think that you just have to make sure that at every step of the way, you're balancing it on the other side so you're not too far in one direction.
That's it. Yeah, absolutely. Well, we'll let you guys go. I'll continue to track where Flus ranks and, you know, how recognizable he is. I always do the combine test, like, because we all walk around the Indy Convention Center, and it's like, you can walk by Brian Callahan and have no idea that guy's an NFL head coach. I still think Zach Taylor falls into that category. Even though
he absolutely does.
Big time, yeah.
And to me...
He's a hell of an athlete, too. That's what's so funny.
Flus is bigger than you think he is. At least Zach Taylor's tall. Brian Callahan, not tall. Stefanski, not like a big guy. There are a lot of nondescript NFL coaches hanging out around there.
Oh, I saw Brian Callahan at the Ritz bar the other night and was like, I had to do a triple take before. I'm like, wait a minute, that is Brian Callahan. Yeah, that guy is an NFL head coach.
Hey, I'm Adam. Who do you write for?
but my point is, Flus has been in that category for me. Huh? Maybe he's going to break out of this here. Maybe they win a couple of games. Well, I'm going to continue to track that for you guys. Okay?
I love that.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you. Really
guys, it's always fun talking to you. Thanks so much for jumping on today. And obviously, we'll continue to listen to the Athletic Football Show, especially leading up to the draft here. Robert, you had a conversation with Mina Kimes, too, I think I saw, right?
We did. So this week was a really fun week on the Athletic Football Show. We did our big quarterback breakdown. We did 25 minutes on Caleb Williams, you know, huge deep dives on Drake May, Jaden Daniels, JJ McCarthy with me, Dana, and Nate. So highly recommend you guys check that out. And then today, Friday, me and Mina just did like an hour-long look at the wide receiver market in the NFL. You know, if we're going to have more rookies coming in, what does that mean for how you spend on free agents? Where are kind of the pinch points? Who should you move on from? Just a really long look at the shifting elements of that receiver market and kind of where it's headed.
Awesome. Cool. So make sure you check that out at Robert Mays on Twitter, at Nate_Tice as well. You guys got to be following them leading up to the draft, listening to the Athletic Football Show. Of course, follow us at Adam Hogue, at Adam Johns, and our show account at Hogue and Johns. All of our merch is up, HoganJohns.com. This has been a lot of fun. We are going to, we'll be back. We're still trying to work on next week's plan. Johnsy's leaving us for a week. He's going to.
I'm out of here.
You never like to say where you're going. You're always so mysterious.
I love that.
Yeah.
I'm going southeast.
it's just a direction. Okay. So he's going to Indianapolis again.
Is that like Florida or like Brazil? Like, both of those things are southeast of where we are right now.
Not as far as Florida. No, we're going to Hilton Head. We're going to Hilton Head this time.
Oh,
wonderful.
I went last summer for my cousin's wedding.
Nice. I was going to say, you just were southeast. I saw you southeast 3 days ago.
So less southeast, but still east.
Fair enough.
I think.
Yeah. Almost straight east. Yeah.
Well, regardless, I'll have you covered next week with something while John's is southeast. And we'll talk to everybody then next week.
See ya.
The culture in our building is outstanding.